You have joined us here inside the Last Video Store. This is a show where I, and my name is Alexi Toliopoulos, talk to cool, funny, interesting, and exciting people about their favorite movies, their favorite films, and the best experiences they have with cinema. And we do so in the style of an old school video store rental combo where I talk to them about their favorite films and give them a recommendation based on their taste. I will just tell you right now before I even introduce what the episode is, it is boiling hot in our studio. There is no air conditioning in Batuta right now. We're in the back room of the video store. Mm-hmm. It is swelteringly hot. I'm here with producer Em in the back room.
Yes, yeah, thanks for bringing me to the back room.
I'm dying right now. I was like, it was the intro I just gave bordered on very professional, but also saying the stuff in wrong order. I've just a bit lost my mind. But it is our summer series right now where mm-hmm. we're doing a rewind, revisiting a bunch of our favorite episodes. Mm-hmm. And this is an extra little bonus one. One of my favorite, I would say this is one I wanted to re-release because I think these are some of the best filmmakers in Australia right now.
Very exciting guests.
The Philippou brothers, I had them for Bring Her Back, their new film. I was very lucky to get a full conversation with them. And one of the very best films of the year, Bring Her Back.
Yeah.
I took you to the premiere that I
yes,
hosted.
Yes, that was awesome.
And you were scared?
I was shit scared, but I had the best time in the world.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of the scariest film experiences I had last year, and I watched mostly horror films.
Yeah, you're a horror head.
Yeah.
You're a true horror head, as am I, and I think this is one of the scariest movies I've seen.
It was terrifying, and I saw, shout out to Xavier and Susie. Mm-hmm. I watched it with them, and they are now my film friends.
Yes.
And it was just a great experience. If they re-release it in the cinema or something, or you can go see a screening in the cinema, go, because it was. I had people dry retching around me. I had people cowering in their seats. That's fun.
I hosted a few screenings with them. So I've seen this movie in 2025. I would have seen this movie more than any other film that year. I would have seen it at least 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
And there is a scene in this film that if you know the movie, you will just know what I'm talking about. I haven't seen that scene because I've covered my eyes every time.
I think I know what you're talking about.
It really disturbs me. Mm-hmm. I have a beautiful chat with them.
Yep, great.
I love
great
talking
chat.
To these guys. They will definitely be back on the show one day because
they've got to make another film,
surely. They've got to make another film for sure. But, like, you know, I'd love to get these guys back on anytime because I love talking to them about film. When mm-hmm. they're talking about their film, exciting. When they're talking about the films they love, mm-hmm. exciting. Mm-hmm. When they were receiving the recommendations from me, they were stoked. So I want to see if they've caught up with them yet. But here's to the Philippou brothers, Danny and Michael. Just have so much respect for these guys. I just adore what they're doing with film. And it makes me so proud that they're doing it here in Australia. Thanks so much, guys, for making movies. It's so hot, I'm losing my mind. But come check out VHS, my comedy festival show that I'm touring this year. I'm coming to Adelaide, the home of the Philippou brothers, very soon. And Sydney and Melbourne Comedy Festival, Brisbane. I would love to do Perth as well. So if you're in Perth and you want me to do Perth, just post comments on my Instagram so that way the people can say, yes, he is welcome into our land.
Alexi is losing consciousness.
I lost it. But check us out on Instagram, Last Video Store Batuta. Enjoy this movie talk. See you later, guys. I'll come back at the end of the episode and say hi again. Last Video Store boys, thank you for joining me here.
We love being here. We love your energy. About it.
Oh, thank goodness. I'll try to get it even more hyped up to match you guys.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
we're gonna go.
Piss the sound guy off. Hey!
That's so mean.
Sorry, Sam. I won't do it. I'll be polite.
Yeah, no, we're gonna get bashed after this.
But I really want to kick things off with you guys. So this is the show all about, like, the video store discovery, that sense of finding movies in the video store.
Heaven.
We're about the same age. Can you tell me about the video store that you guys grew up with and finding movies in there?
Blockbuster, Ingle Farm.
And Atlantic Video.
Main
North Road. Atlantic Video, Main North Road.
It's a really good one. What we used to do What we used to do was our grandfather didn't know what was inappropriate and appropriate. Wow. And he used to live with us and was helping raise us.
He's full Greek.
Is
he's full Greek.
Babu. Yeah, beautiful.
And so like, Babu, we need to get this this kids movie, this cartoon, and we'd get like an R-rated anime. Or we'd be like, Babu, mom said I can rent The Exorcist, the comedy movie. And he's like, oh, okay. And it's like, we would always like trick him.
Because he didn't know the ratings. Mm-hmm. He didn't know. R is 18 plus only.
Yeah, R for that. It's good for the kids.
And then so our mom would yell at him, you can't show them this. She's like, whoa, they said those are fine. And then when he got told off for that, then we would do the anime, the Samurai X, all the R-rated anime. And then he got told off for that too.
Poor Babu.
But it's a cartoon. Yeah. It's a cartoon. Poor guy. Poor Babu.
But you know, without Babu, you wouldn't be here today. You would have discovered all these kind of mucked up movies at an early age.
Because isn't that the best part when you're going through the video store and you're looking through and you just have the covers and a bit of the blurb and these weird images at the back? The video store era was a magical time.
Yeah, I used to always feel uneasy going down that aisle with the horror movies and the porn aisle.
They had an adult aisle, didn't they, at the video stores?
At the video stores that you went to, they have a full aisle. Was it secluded off or was it just
anyone could just walk in there.
Wow.
It wasn't like hidden in the back room.
No,
it was a lot of foundational memories formed going between those two aisles.
Those are the movies Buffalo would always get.
Did Babu ever watch these movies with you, or was he just like putting it on and off?
He was like, we just come home, like, thanks, Babu. We'll just go into the room and be watching it. Yeah, he had no idea.
I'm glad you mentioned The Exorcist. It's one of those movies that's like, I think when I hosted the Talk to Me premiere in Sydney with you guys when it came out, and Exorcist came up as like one of your influences.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite movies. But the thing that always like sticks out to me is it is so weird that the priest in the movie is this Catholic priest, but he's Greek. And I'm like, there's not really many Greek Catholics. So I always found it so strange. Like, why did they pick that?
Well, you know, there's always like a weird thing with like certain people where you're like, how come that person sounds like that when they're from here?
Mm.
But like, there is like weird eccentricities of different people in different places. So I buy it completely.
Of course I buy it too. My theory always was that Peter Blatty, the author of The Exorcist, because I've never been able to find it. I've been trying to research for ages, like, why is there the Greek Catholic priest? It's not really Greek Catholics around.
Yeah.
So I was trying to figure it out. And I think William Blatty is Lebanese, and so he's like Catholic Lebanese.
Oh, gotcha.
And I think that he was like, maybe the American audiences don't know what that is.
You think it was in the book and not in casting?
That's my theory. That is my theory. But I've never had it confirmed, and most people are dead that were involved with it now.
Lost William Blatty. That's a bit of a shame.
Yeah, but you know, one day I'll get to the answer.
Yeah, you'll get there. I mean, you can read everything. There's like, even like, there was like, he wrote an autobiography of him being on the set of The Exorcist. Mm. There was like him talking about, and he like has his original script in there as well. It's so fascinating when you go down that rabbit hole and you can like read people being on set from the 70s. It's pretty incredible.
Who was it that gave the feedback on The Exorcist and they said, everyone knows it's a possession. Everyone knows that it's real. And it was at the beginning structured as if you didn't know for the like almost the entire.
Oh, film. I have no idea. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. What is he talking about? What is he on about?
I sound like.
Now we've cut it. We've cut it out.
New release.
Well, let's get into some movies, dudes. We'll talk about your film as a new release title from the new release section of the video store.
Yep.
And then I'll send you out into the aisles. You pick up a couple of other films of your choice. And then it'll be upon me. The pressure will be added to me. And I want you guys to go full pressure on me.
Oh, my.
Yes, the stakes will be high.
What's the stake? Is it like, have you seen this movie?
I will give you a recommendation. Hopefully it's a film you've not seen before. And hopefully it clicks. Hopefully you agree that will be a good movie for you to watch. If not, I don't know. You guys have got some pretty mucked up heads, so you can torture me. Torture in some way. Put me on some sort of possession journey.
Yeah, we love that. So wait, we're in the new release aisle, and there's Bring Her Back.
Yeah.
You can rent this for one.
That's going to go straight to the weeklies.
One or two nights. Or just have it for free, please. Just take it.
Well, let's talk about Bring Her Back.
Horror.
I absolutely love this film. Dare I say, I might even like it more than Talk to Me.
Oh!
Yes, I think so. I think it's true. I mean, it maybe definitely affected me more emotionally than Talk to Me. Like, this film really got under my skin. I loved it, and I felt horrible after seeing it. But I think I want to kind of kick things off by just even talking about the genesis of this film. Can you talk to me about where this film begins for you in a creative sense?
There's always different seeds that spawn different ideas. They always come from the most random of places. But like when you're writing, it's just about like tapping into stuff that you find really uncomfortable or freak you out. Like, for example, like we're talking about, you know, Greek Catholic, but like with Greek Orthodox funerals, you know, they've got those open caskets.
This is exactly what I want to talk to you guys about. Yeah. Because it's like, I even seeing Talk to Me, like I'm Greek as well. I see the world through that lens. And I think the way that Greeks experience death or mourning is so intense, and they force it onto your way that is inescapable. And as soon as I saw this film, I go, oh my god, I can finally talk to you guys about this stuff, because it feels so intrinsic to like how this film expresses mourning, loss, grief, everything.
Yeah, and it was sort of like when you're like writing something, and it's like really therapeutic to talk about certain memories. So like, this is a bit of a screwed up memory, but like our grandfather passed away in our house, and
on Christmas Day, best present.
That was a terrible joke. Wow. That was an evil joke.
What was that joke?
Let's
rewind the videotape, and we'll cut that bit out.
Well, I mean, I guess now it's a present for you guys. We have to put some kind of wrapping on it.
Make some levity on it by making the joke.
I'm trying to make a joke.
Yeah, but it's sort of like I so vividly remember the vomit in my dad's beard trying to give him CPR.
Yeah.
And I remember being terrified of going into that room. And like just being around it reminded me of the smell of it, reminded me of the memory of it. And it was like traumatizing even just like into a room. And so like that made its way into the script. That was an inspiration point. I hate metal on teeth. That's an inspiration point. You're right about that. Greek Orthodox funerals, you're kissing the corpse or the head of the corpse. That's a bit uncomfortable. And like the idea that like naturally you don't have to do that. There's people that are like, I can't even look at an open casket. I can't do it. And that's completely valid and safe. But Laura, like knowing psychology and knowing that's bothering this kid, forces him to do this thing. And it's like showing A, she's got an uncomfortable relationship with death, and B, what's her motive here? Why is she doing this? These aren't exact memories, but like you, like all different weird inspiration points. Like I remember at our grandfather's funeral, there was this family friend that we didn't really like that much, and she came up to me and like wrapped her arms around me and was like, "It's okay, Danny's okay, everyone," and was like pulling me through the funeral. And I was like, "I'm actually a bit uncomfortable right now. Like I want to be like grieving with my family and stuff." And she's just there, like that sort of memory like makes its way to the script. So it's just drawing on all different things,
and it doesn't really come. You always have a bunch of different ideas that spawn out of nothing, you know, and then it, when you're writing a movie and it's okay, it's focusing on this, these characters, these are the themes, and then those ideas, they make their way in there. So they're always just hanging around.
And it's always kind of channel them. And it's always like really rough notes. Like it's all over the place. Like we've talked to me. It's like, possession, a guy kisses dog. And it's like always just moments and scenes, and there's no real structure to it. And then Bill Hintzman, our co-writer, is so good at helping find that structure and instructors. Yeah, and like helping like form that, and it's like back and forth of like finding the through line of these things and like making it cohesive.
Can you talk about that collaboration you have with your co-writer? Because I think it's a fascinating theme, because you guys are so collaborative. Like you already collaborate with each other. Can you talk about bringing the other people into your collaborative style?
Well, then, like
I would say with writing, okay, we can't work together. We can't write.
But together.
The best thing about Bill Hinsman, the co-writer, is we could write. Say we're writing an action film. I could write scenes and scenes and scenes, characters with no structure, and then just ideas, getting them out onto the page, and then talking through them with him, and then he would go, okay, he's so good with structure and character and motivation and theme that he can go, okay, this is what it would look like this or that. Is this what? And then he can kind of like, it's like you've almost got the puzzle pieces, and he creates a border for them to be in or something.
But like, even like you discover stuff by doing drafts on drafts. Yeah. Like the first few drafts of Talk to Me, there was no hand. It just said haunted object. And it's like, when you go back for those scenes, there's something inherent in all of it already. And like, you haven't found it yet. You don't know exactly what it is that you're trying to say while you're writing, but you find that voice as you've written it. And you're like, oh, this is connected to this. This is feeling that. And like connection was such a big thing for Talk to Me, that felt right. Like hand and connection and touch, like was the thematic thing. And like same with bring it back. There's this thing about perception and experiencing the light side of life and the dark side. Mm. So like those colors became a thing, or like, these points of views and perspective, and like these characters are being open with each other, but they're talking with their backs to each other and they can't see what they're expressing in that moment. It's not a real true moment of honesty. Mm. It's such a weird thing, because you're just expressing yourself. You're just being personal, and there's no through line yet. But that's the thing about art, is that it's just expressive.
Do you think like having a collaborator that's so keen on structure and so can have that focus on it, it allows because your films are so emotionally grounded, and that's where the truth and stuff is of your films. Do you think that allows you to keep those emotions and that sensitivity like more pure?
I just say that like he also writes pages and everything, so it's not like it's only like me writing. But yes, there's something that like I want this in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, feel this scene. Mm. And I know it doesn't make sense right now and you're questioning it, but like I can't picture this movie without this movie. Like, we have to make this work. So that's a part of the process as well. It's also good to have someone that when you hit a roadblock and you have the writer's block and you're like, I'm stuck. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, usually I would just give up. Like, all right, I'll go play a video game then. Oh, I'll watch a movie. That'll inspire me. Oh, I've watched it. I'm tired. I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
But to have someone that you could get on the phone and talk to, like, that helps you climb over those hurdles. So you're not just stuck there. Everyone's spitballing. Everyone's saying, why doesn't that work? What can we do here? And that helps you get over those humps.
And I think it's also finding collaborators that you trust. People that are talented in specific, not just writing, but say sound. Music
that complement your skills and fill those gaps as well.
And they're better than you are at those things, and you like their work, you trust their work, so you want to collaborate with them. And it's not like, you know, I say Aaron McCliskey, the DOP, he makes everything look better than you envision in your mind. So having people like that you can trust and that are passionate and they want to make the best thing possible, you know, they're fighting for the film. They're the people you want to find and keep in your corner.
And even like, they're all creative. They're all artists. Like, even our costume designer, Anna, she's telling the character story through what they're wearing. And like, having that conversation, I would never have thought to have that conversation. I'm like, oh, they wear what they wear. But she's such an artist and like knows the film. She knows the script and like brings these ideas and it sparks these ideas. And it's such a beautiful collaboration. That's the most amazing part about making a film, is that the people that you make it with together. And everyone has a foot down on set, which like, I'm saying this. Oh, no, I don't like that. We're not doing that. Everyone's got a foot down. They're like, actually, we're doing that. And like, giving them the freedom to be like, it's not just our movie. It's everybody's movie.
I'd love to talk to you guys about mythology, because the film, it begins in this way that feels so immersed in like this mythology. You're seeing like some kind of Eastern European ritual that's being captured on these VHS tapes. Can you talk about, I guess, what your research was for that, or what were you drawing on? And then I'd love to hear about creating those actual VHS tapes, because to me, I think the scariest thing ever is an idea of snuff, like seeing some, it feels very real to me.
Yeah.
So whenever a horror film kind of captures something on a different media that feels real, it makes you feel sick and disgusted.
Well, you know those videos, that stuff growing up, you know, that you're not supposed to
see those.
Exactly.
And you're like, how the hell did this come about? Yeah. Like, where did this come from?
Was that one of the tapes that Papu brought you guys?
Papu got some weird shit. It's interesting because like, it's that lost media or like these videos that you stumble across without the context, and you're seeing this stuff that you're not supposed to see. Like when you're younger and you're growing up, that stuff terrifies you and sticks with you. I remember there was one image that I saw of this person on the floor that was just vomiting up Fruit Loops. And then I couldn't eat Fruit Loops for so long.
The guy where they pour the milk into his mouth and he's lying back?
It's just a picture of him. Something about the picture was so off-putting and gross. And there's soggy Fruit Loops on the floor and this like, it was like vomited up. Oh God, it's disgusting. And there's no context to it. You're like, what is this? Why is this bothering me so much? Like that feels like an inspiration point. These like lost media without the context. And it's so fun to build out your mythology and build out your backstory and build out this whole world. And your film takes place here. All this stuff is around it. I don't like it in a film when everything is so overtly told to you. Oh, and they go to the library and they start researching that and you have all the answers. Automatically, you've given it a way to be defeated. You've given it a name and a face, and it's no longer terrifying. I like being stuck in this thing, and you get hints at it, and you can put it together if you want to. Like, the clues are there.
They're not told overtly. So yeah. Things through sound, dialogue, and then shooting it on a real, you know, camcorder. And then, like, so there was actual tape that we would scrunch up, wow. Jack, Jack VFX, toys, yeah. That would like scrunch up so we had the real snow, the real feeling of it. This is a real tape.
17 you know? Versions of each shot of different snow and a different amount of distortion.
No way.
He was so, he's like, here you are. And it's like going through and like, oh, I love that moment. I love this. Like, I want to transition from this shot into this shot and get lost in snow and static. And every time that you do it digitally, you can see that and you can tell that it's digital and it feels unauthentic. It feels fake. Mm. The same sort of when there's like a fake app in a movie, as in like, you know,
Friendster.
I'm automatically like pulled out of the movie. That is not a real thing. And, like even capturing, like I want to capture them on the phone in camera. I want to put that tape on the actual TV.
So oh my God, continuity wise though.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But we did it practically on the thing, but it's a nightmare. Oh my God. Like when you're going through scenes and the thing that's playing in the background's got to be a certain image at a certain time.
But you can use like, even like the you can change it a little bit with the VFX. Like I can change that image, but we've shot all those plates practically. Like they were shot on the screen.
Yeah.
They're not false.
We're talking about the rabbit holes.
Yeah, these are rabbit
holes. We went in down big rabbit holes, even with things like breathing.
Yeah.
The breathing parts. So the Hamish, who does the assistant dialogue stuff, he's so incredible. But we had probably 2 days to go through like breathing passes with like a week.
Yeah.
And then he's like, what are
these fucking breathing passes?
We've got some really good breathing with these characters.
It's so interesting because you can create like a movement and a tempo by just the way that people are breathing. It's so interesting.
And with that, like the ritualistic aspect of it, and like the kind of demonic, the possession aspect of that, can you talk about like what mythology you were drawing on, what you were researching, what you're looking for?
Well, it was like talking to people in the occult that practice the occult, talking to people that have written spell books. And it's like, it's never like grabbing an exact thing, but it's like,
if the spirit world's real, there'd be so many clinging onto you right now. Danny was like, Danny goes down these rabbit holes of these, like, about actually talking to people and buying these books and stuff.
Wow. It's
like,
they're horrifying.
It's but they're interesting. And it's so weird. Like,
this guy's weird.
No, wow. I find it fascinating.
It's official, you're weird.
I find it fascinating and I find it like so interesting, the psychology behind really believing it. And like, I find that really fascinating that this woman thinks she can actually turn into a cat. That's interesting to me. And it's about just grabbing little bits and pieces that you like freak you out or are interesting and then building your own lore out of it.
Yeah, I think it's so beautifully done in the film. And I think partly is, like I said before, it's like the way that you guys have to ground everything in emotions. And I think the key to this film is these really, really beautiful performances that you get out of people.
Yeah.
Can you talk about, I mean, the casting of Sally Hawkins is like such, it seems like such an out there choice because I mostly know from like Mike Lee's movies.
Yeah.
But I think that, her background in theater and with Mike Lee, it extends so well to creating such a grounded character with like this deep emotional resonance. Can you talk about casting her and then directing her as well?
We thought there was no way that she'd say yes. And we're so in awe of her filmography. And our producer, Samantha Jennings, was like, Sally Hawkins. Like, relook at Sally Hawkins.
I've dropped juice on my hands here.
Well, that is revolting.
Oh, where did the juice come from?
I can't see juice anywhere.
We need to pause this. Every time that she's a character, she's someone different.
Mm.
And she embodies it so realistically. And it was interesting that she'd never done a genre film. In terms of like an outward horror, like an outward villain. But when we sent the script, that's why we thought she's not going to say yes. People are like, your energies aren't going to match. But she was drawn to it from a character level and wasn't even looking at it as a horror film. And when we got in the call of her, she was in love with it. And was like picking up all these little moments, all these little beats, and like putting a magnifying to them. And it was such a beautiful, amazing collaboration. Someone that cares that much. Someone that you're comfortable with asking to come to set at 5 a.m. with no crew. And let's just record. Let's be in the environment. Someone that dresses the set in character. Or like acts out moments of Wendy. Like let's act out that. Like we're driving somewhere. We're driving to work. Like just in character. Like saying conversations. It gives like a lived history. And it comes across on the screen. Like it really does. So,
and it's not just with Sally, it's all the characters. We do that with all the actors that we work with.
Yeah.
And I think that helps have a lived reality. Even if it's stuff that's not in the movie, by playing out those scenes makes them real in some way. So key moments in that character's life, acting them out in character, it gives it a sense of history.
I think as well, like with this, you work with young actors so well. Piper was what we're talking about, that character, and I guess finding the perfect actor for it as well.
Like that research phase of talking to non-sighted people and vision impaired people and trying to bring that authenticity to the character and then authentically casting somebody that has an impairment, that makes it so real and lived in. And like when you're working with young actors, it's about letting them know like there's no such thing as a bad take. You're not letting anyone down. Like you can be comfortable here. Like we're all trying. Like I'm a terrible director. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Like you don't have to be embarrassed about anything. We're all finding it together. And like keeping those sets super lighthearted and fun. And like when you're doing those dark, like emotional scenes, give Sally prompts at the end of it to pull people out of it with a weird joke take where she'll just randomly start singing her lines. And I think it's easy to get overwhelmed, especially with a young actor. And Sora had never acted before.
Yeah.
So in the audition, we did an improv scene and we said, this is a character, this is what you're feeling. And she was able to channel that and it felt real. She was so good at it. It's reminding her of that. All these cameras, all these people, all the lighting, it doesn't matter. All this stuff, it doesn't matter. We got to get into a headspace that none of that is here. You'll just hear this character feeling this. And that, let's get that. All this other stuff that's around. Because you can get... Like, I remember the first time I was on a film set, I went and there was one lighting truck and I felt overwhelmed. Mm. Oh my God. They got light, all this stuff in the back. But everyone's got a job and it's kind of trying to strip that all away with the performers so they can just perform and be in the moment, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, you can change dialogue if it's easier to say it another way. You can pick your costume, whatever's going to make you more comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I also talk, before we wrap things up on this part of the chat, I think this film has such a great sense of like the supernatural. And when I was watching the film, I've seen it a couple of times now, and the first instance where it becomes like explicitly, you go, there's something beyond here. Like this actually could be something real here. It's almost like the 40 minute mark. I believe it was actually almost exactly 39 minutes.
Yeah.
I did have a time code the second time I watched the film. But I was wondering if there's anything earlier in the film that kind of starts laying that up, or even when you're thinking about the film as a whole piece, when do you decide to go, this is where we should start bringing in this extra element that's beyond like the grounded understanding of reality that we're playing in?
That's like the opening scene, I think, sets a bit of a supernatural tone. And it was about cutting that down so it didn't overshadow the first half of the movie. Because initially it was a long 3 to 4 minute, one take, one shot that goes around and like shows this ritual and you're getting glimpses at all this supernatural stuff. But it felt like it took the air out of the room, where it was hard to care about the characters as much because there's such an extreme thing that happened.
You know, the world's bigger than just these characters.
Yeah. If you put too much emphasis on the beginning, it's about threading it in lightly, so there's little things, and almost keep it in a way that is she, isn't she, and then it's that second night. Oh, she is.
Yeah,
and there was like scenes that we cut out that were overtly supernatural. And it was like, you just find that control in the edit. And like, we have an amazing editor, Jeff Land, that helps find that rhythm and pace as well. And Samantha Jennings,
our producer.
Because it's so strange. In an edit, everything, if you change one thing in one scene, it has ripple effect all the way down. Even how long a shot is.
Yeah.
You know, or this character, if that character smiles here, that puts a different thing, that puts different emphasis on the character all the way through it. You know, so all those little decisions, you know, they have repercussions down the line. So it's always constantly about ironing it out and trying different things, trying a different placement and peeling it back. And not enough, too much. It's such a complicated process, editing a movie. It's finding it is a very difficult. But when you and that's what's kind of hard at the beginning, you know, with an edit,
because
you're like redoing the whole film in a way. And then it's when it clicks. There's usually one thing. There was one thing that we changed at the bus stop scene. There was a little bit before it. And we just changed that one thing and everything just clicked and it all made sense. Yes. And that's the best when you get that.
The problem solving aspect.
Yeah.
Of it.
And then once it falls out. And then it starts falling into place.
It's like chiropractor. You know, like when you've got like, oh, this hurts here. That's actually because there's a knot down here. And like fixing that fixes this. It's interesting.
And on that supernatural sense, I'd love to hear about prosthetic, makeup, character design, creature design, gore. Because this film feels like you're getting to explore that aspect of horror, which is one of the great delights of horror, even more than you were able to with Talk to Me.
Yeah, it was always about like, let's see something that we haven't seen before. Let's tie it to character, tie it to theme, but let's find a way to pull this stuff off practically. use as little CG as possible. Like, have it tangent, have it in there. Like, have the characters actually be able to interact with it. And it's so much fun to shoot it. And it's so fun to have these incredible artists. Like, we had two prosthetics crews on Bring It Back. Like, Scarecrow Effects and Meg Effects. And they bring so much skill to this thing where, like...
Creativity.
Yeah, and creativity. Like, they're spitballing. They're giving ideas out. They're the ones executing this impossible stuff. It's like the funnest part of a horror film is being able to shoot that sort of stuff and execute it. It's the most horrific to watch.
Yeah.
But oh my God, is it
fun? Someone screamed in the critics screening that I went to. Oh, we love that. That was a big scream. And it was, you know, it was
we've
wonderful.
Answered that person.
And can I ask that big belly? I really hear about that big belly because that's like, that's something I've never seen in a horror film before. It makes so much sense and it kind of, there's something about it where it's like, how has no one ever really done a demonic possession with like this big ass belly like that. There's something about that just feels so, it almost feels like something out of an anime, to be honest, you know, like in a really cool way.
What's awesome about it is like Larry, like put a bit of weight in there. So there was a bit of thing where it's like, it's not like this like light thing you can just run around in. He really helps, does something that like plants its foot in reality. And it's like tying back to this like being that's it represents a couple of different things, but one thing that it represents is like this grief, and like grief can be all consuming and it can eat you alive if you let it. That's so fun. It's like that you've got these ideas and these themes, and there's other things that like,
and then if you internalize it, even things that if you internalize it, it'll eat you alive and come out in ugly ways, different ways. It's so when you speak about thematically and then to talk with these people, okay, what does that look like? What would this monster look like? What are the stages, you know? And it's just a deterioration. And that's what's, like, creating those looks, finding those looks with say, Larry and Nick from those companies, that's the fun. It's so incredible.
And Laura is turning this kid into a monster as well. Like they're all victims in their own way. It's just that was the other thing we're editing, is like, there's, mainly one perspective in Talk To Me, and this one is four. So it's like, that was part of the puzzle as well. It was like jumping between these different perspectives in like one scene.
Weekly. Well, I think it's time we kind of send you out into the store. You pick out some movies and wander through the aisles, pick up some movies.
I feel bad.
Don't get lost in there. Don't get lost in there, please.
You know what? I feel bad for like the newer generation. I think maybe every generation would say this, but how cool was it on a Friday night when you go to your friend's house or your family's house? Okay, let's go to the video store and then picking those videos. Like that's the most fun part of growing up. But I used to love that.
In 20 years time, when you can just like install these lenses into your eyes and you can stream like AI movies and be like, I want a movie about this love relationship between these two, a dog and a cat.
Yeah.
Like
that. I want one movie in each eye. I want different movies and watch two at the same time.
And then they'll go, you know, back in the day we used to have like a streaming thing and there were movies and you could pick them. So like,
it wasn't just in your eyes. You had to subscribe
You had to pay for it.
What? And now movies appeal. You swallow it and you know the whole movie.
Yeah, and you're in the movie, you act in it. This generation still has a bookstore, which has that same sort of feeling as a video store. Which is true.
But books are worse than movies. But we'll talk about some films. One of the films I saw you talk about when talking about this film, it made perfect sense when I saw that there was this connection, like this lineage between films, is Whatever Happened to Baby Jane by Robert Aldrich. Thriller. Can you talk about even...
The book?
No. Don't talk about the book. We'll talk about the movie. Only the movie. I love this movie. I remember discovering it in the video store. I worked at a video store as a teenager, and it was one of those classics I'd heard about for a long time. I remember getting it out on DVD, and it kind of blowing my mind because it was just not the movie I expected it to be. It's kind of this weird, grim, gothic, almost... It feels like noir at certain points.
Yeah.
With this Hollywood tale with Bette Davis and Joan Crawford. Can you talk about this? I love this movie. I was so excited to see you pick this film.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. Like, when you talk about noir, I think they had the opportunity or the option to release the film in color. And they didn't. Like, that's fascinating. Someone fact check that, I'm pretty sure.
Fact checking. We don't want any fact checking.
Take my word for it. No, I swear it is.
Yeah.
And it's like these two really like renowned, like Bette Davis is such a powerful character actor. And like she like played all these super grounded real roles. And to see her in a role where she could play things out of 10, That is so exciting. It's like the sandbox has expanded and they're able to express themselves in like a bigger way. And it doesn't even matter if like, I don't even mind that moment of Bring It Back sort of like teeters on a little bit of camp. I like how eccentric and big you can be with these genre films. I think that's the fun of those films. And even there's something comforting about those old school films. So it's even the sound quality or the way that they capture these pictures or the grain of this film. I don't know. I adore it so much. And one of my favorite memories of Bring It Back was one weekend watching Whatever Happened to Baby Jane with Sally Hawkins.
Wow, my God.
Like, that was
the... That's every boy's dream.
Oh, I mean, everyone's wants that. And, like, she was, like, doing the voices of the characters and acting as though the characters. It was just the most incredible, beautiful...
That was almost as fun as going Ding Dong Dashing with Sally Hawkins.
We went Ding Dong Dashing with
Are
Sally
you serious?
Hawkins.
Yeah,
because there was a scene that got cut where they go Ding Dong Dashing.
And we you did it for real?
Yeah, we said to Sally one night, it was, like, midnight, do you want to go do it for real? She's like, can we? And then we rang Billy, who plays Andy.
Yeah.
And we're like, you want to go Ding Dong Dash? He's like, yeah, all right.
And then we all went, it's a funny, we got it on video,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, we got such
her going to, her Ding Dong Dashing and the light going on, and everyone running down the street. Realized,
imagine it's like midnight, and then your doorbell rings, and you look on your, like, your video thing, and it's like, is that Sally Hawkins? Yes.
Is that the mum from Paddington?
Yeah.
Yeah, why is she knocking on my door at 2 a.m.? Yeah.
One other thing that I think is a great 1-2 between Bring Her Back and Whatever Happened to Baby Jane is like the set. They're like these claustrophobic houses. And in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, it is that this staircase is almost like the third character in the film because it's like the villain in a sense.
Yeah.
It's just this thing that traps them. I think about that so much. What was it with you guys and like kind of finding the perfect house for this story or finding the set for this film?
The pool was the staircase in this movie. It was about finding a house that had the pool at the heart of it, because that is what created all of this. So not being able to escape the pool from every window was a big part of it, and trying to find a house that does that practically. It was so funny. That house is part of like a walk trail. So it's public land, the front yard. So you'd be filming this stuff and people would be...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh my God, what's wrong with that boy?
Yeah,
what's
wrong with that boy? What the hell's going on?
Is that like, Paddington's mum?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, oh, I don't want to say
spoil. But it's also like that collaboration with our production designer, Vanessa. And it was like, even like we wanted more of a vantage point. So there was like this whole wall and window that got pulled out, and they built an atrium into the house where you really could feel that pool imposing. And like the color scheme is like Laura's costume. She's a dying leaf. When you see her, she's in these oranges. And by the end of it, she's in these browns. Like she's dying. She's rotting away.
And in the flashback, she's green.
Yeah, there's a flashback where she's wearing the green. And then that also like ties back to the production design, the colors of the walls downstairs. Like Laura's putting on a happy front and she's like presenting herself to these greens and oranges. And if you go upstairs to her bedroom, there's these rotted browns and she's dead inside. And there's these ugly things that are happening. Yeah, to be able to tell like the story through the location, through the set, through the costume. It's so incredible.
Shooting on location like that, for that downstairs. The lighting, oh my God, nightmare. It's a nightmare. Well, we had a nightmare.
Yeah, the nightmare was like, I remember, they were like, we need to shoot these rain scenes at nighttime. Like you can't control cloud cover. We didn't have the budget to like block off or scrim the sun. So it was constantly fighting the sun and trying to make it look like
it's behind the tree, quickly! We can roll, do it!
Well, this is the best day for night I've ever seen there.
Yeah, yeah.
We have one more weekly choice from you guys. One other weekly title. What's another film that you want to talk about? Maybe something that influenced the film?
Dead Alive.
Oh, yes. Do you want it? Yeah,
Peter Jackson.
Yeah, yeah.
1992.
Yeah.
I mean...
Cult. Talk about practical and talk about like the... amazing first step into like creating the Lord of the Rings franchise, which is like will go down as one of the most iconic films in cinema history. It's like I love those first steps. I love that you see him.
Oh, you see the progression in his movies.
Yeah, you can see the passion in those scenes. You can see the practical nature of how he executed this stuff, like carried over. Like if you look at Fellowship of the Ring and how grand that scale was, like that history of building out Hobbiton and like those costume designers, like putting in every single link of armor.
Yeah.
That is so incredible.
And it begins with this crazy horror kind of comedy type psycho gore fest.
And it's it's that same thing. How do you pull this off practically? And you create these amazing masks and blood rigs and even equipment. His own, like, you can't afford it. Making your own jib, making your own dolly from just stuff at home or from the shops.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of times that people, they want the whole like, they want the whole professional setup, but the fun is the stuff before it. You're using what you can, putting books up on the, you know, on the table to make, that's your tripod, you know, doing things like that. That's the fun of filmmaking.
I remember being film school as a kid, like real young, like 18 or whatever, and just putting like a camera on a piece of paper and sliding it across the table to do dolly shots and stuff.
And like that, those films are like, with bad taste and like a bunch of stuff, it's sort of like, they feel like YouTube videos.
Yeah.
I love the DIY quality to them. I love the feeling of that. You can see like this auto in the making.
Yeah. Well, beautiful choice.
Staff pick.
Now, let me factor that into my brain as well while I give you a recommendation. I was jumping around the booth, you guys. So I wanted to give you something special. No, you're going to... I don't know what will happen if I didn't give the recommendation. I can split up. I don't know. But I was really trying to think of like something special for you guys. And I wanted to give you something weird genre, but genre in a different way. Kind of the way that you guys embrace genre. I will hopefully not defeated, but who knows? I've got backups.
It's got to involve drama.
Let him do what he wants.
And I would even say that the Baby Jane was like a bit of an extra like light bulb moment for me.
Yeah.
But this movie that I saw like for the first time last year, 1990 Greek cinema.
Whoa!
Yes. It's by a filmmaker called Nico Nicolaides. And I was unfamiliar with him, but this was a bit of a gateway into going, like, I want to see everything this guy made. So this movie called Singapore Sling.
Cult.
Have you heard of Singapore Sling?
You've defeated us. I have not.
Damn. I'm taking the boys down.
Singapore Sling. Let me put
Singapore
that on
Sling.
My watch list.
Really?
Wow.
You know, pitch us Singapore Sling.
I'll tell
Sling.
You a little about it. It's Singapore. Also got a subtitle called O Andras Por Agopuse Ena Toma.
Oh, yeah, that's what we did see. We did see.
Yes.
Oh, I have seen that.
The Man Who Loved the Corpse, which is like such a hectic subtitle. But it nestles nicely between noir, horror, dark erotica, exploitation, and art cinema with this touch of black comedy that's something unfathomably unique for me. I'll give you a little bit of plot synopsis as well to whet your appetite to really nail it on the watch list too. But Singapore Sling is a character who's chasing after Laura, a romantic memory from his past. One night he finds himself in a mysterious villa watching two women bury a body. He falls into their trap, and in an atmosphere of isolation and decadence, the trio act out insane pleasure games and the ritual of blood and murder.
Damn! I'm so in.
Yes, okay. And it's all black and white, so Baby Jane quality there too.
We're loving it. Wow.
But even this relation between these two characters, these two women, is very creepy in this Baby Jane way. But it's a kind of like avant-garde European experiment that you have this hunger to keep watching to like, I got to discover more of the secrets. Like, what does this film hold?
Yeah. Oh, that sounds incredible.
Yeah. Oh so, my God, that sounds awesome. I want to hear
your backups. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll give you the backup to this other one, Japanese film called Hiruko the Goblin.
Horror.
Have you seen Hiruko the Goblin?
No, I have not seen
Hiruko the Goblin.
Wow. This guy.
Okay, I'll give you the backup as well then. I'm having such a good time, I'll give you two recommendations. But this is directed by Shinya Tsukamoto, who is the director of Tetsuo the Iron Man as well. But this
I've
is
seen
like a
Tetsuo
more,
the Iron Man. I've seen that one.
I'm not defeated. That one doesn't count. That's just me saying a movie
out
loud.
Yeah, not the same movie.
But it's kind of that movie I think you'd really love, especially like bad taste coming up in like the early Peter Jackson films. Because it's like he's shot at trying to make a mainstream Japanese horror film. But it's kind of like, when I saw this film, I was like going, oh, this is what it would be like to discover the Evil Dead out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like weird, supernatural, paranormal, almost like Ghostbusters, but mucked up and fucked up the way that Peter Jackson movies are. Like,
wait, spell it for me.
Hiruko the Goblin, H-I-R-U-K-O, the... spelled traditionally, and Goblin spelled traditionally as well. But boys, thanks so much for coming into the video store. This was so much fun. What a delight, a dream come true. You got some beautiful choices, some beautiful movies, a couple of recommendations.
Oh my God, and we're not paying.
Oh no, I'm going to track these boys down. I got all their details on the computer. But thanks so much, guys, and I'll see you tonight, tomorrow night, during the premieres and stuff.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, we should shout out Galactic Video in South Australia. Is an actual VHS store that's still running that has all these amazing genre films.
Oh wow.
Yeah, shout out Galactic Video.
I'll see you guys there then.
We'll see you there.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Cheers.
Thank you.
The last video store.
wow, 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 do I love to talk about movies first, guys. This is officially the outro of the episode. It's even hotter than when I started this episode in here. The humidity is thick, as am I, so we are not a good match together. And huge joy to revisit the Philippou brothers.
They're so cool.
Really cool guys. Love and them. It's been, I liked putting this one in this little batch because it's a more recent one than some of the other ones that we put in the rewind this year. But that's just to show, bring her back, nominated for a lot of actor awards at the Australian Film Awards and nominated for, in my heart, one of the best movies of the year. I just care about this movie a lot. I will revisit it again one day, but I saw it five times in 2025. It might be a decade before I get back to it. But it's a movie that I know I have a relationship with for the rest of my life as a film lover. So great to revisit it. Thank you to the Philippou Brothers for coming on the show. Come back again. You're always welcome to The Last Video Store. You guys are such Greek-Australian heroes of cinema. Not just soldiers of cinema, heroes of cinema. So thanks for joining us. In the meantime, come check out my comedy festival show, VHS. And tickets are in the show notes. I don't know if I've said that already in the outro. It's really warm. But I love you guys. We're coming back with some new episodes starting soon. Should we say who some of the new episodes are?
Sure.
Little tease at the end of the episode.
I think we already have, but
we
go
already
for
have.
It.
We'll do another tease. Geraldine Viswanathan, a great film star, Australian, lives in America now, but I think bright comedy future. She is bright. When I say bright comedy future, she's doing a freaking sitcom with Amy Poehler.
Yeah, she's
announced.
Already there.
She's just, I just love this chat that I've got with Geraldine coming up. And one of my true heroes of cinema, of Greek cinema, Athena Red Sangari. That will be coming up very soon. And her film Harvest is a film that is, I've shouted out already, my favorite films of the year of 2025. Hopefully you can find and see it somewhere because it is spectacular. But I love this chat with Athena. So those are the first few episodes. If you're a big movie star or movie maker and want to do the podcast, hit me up.
If you're a huge movie star.
If you're huge, we'll do it.
I would love to get The Rock on.
I want to get The Rock. My dream guest for this year, probably The Rock.
Probably Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leo DiCaprio and...
Nicole Kidman? That's an actual...
Nicole Kidman, I would love... Nicole, if you're listening, come on the podcast. And dream guest for the podcast?
Yeah.
Orson Welles. Crossing my fingers for
Orson
Welles.
Please come
Orson,
on.
Orson, if you're listening, Orson, come on the podcast, Orson.
Explain Rosebud to me. I'm confused.
Well, Rosebud actually relates to his childhood distance.
Not
away.
You, Orson.
Let's let the episode end there.